This call is being recorded April 20th, 2009. Good afternoon. My name is Jasper, and I will be your conference operator today. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to the Premier Healthcare IT Collaborative Conference Call. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question during this time, simply press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, press the pound key. Thank you. I would now like to turn the call over to Mr. Blair Childs, Senior Vice President of Public Affairs with Premier. Sir, you may begin.
Thanks, Jasper, and good day, everybody. I'm glad you could be with us. This is the kickoff call of the Health Information Technology Collaborative that Premier has put together to really work with our members to help ensure that they take full advantage of the stimulus funding and really help us advance the care of and the healthcare in the communities that we all serve through better use of health information technology and EMRs, EHRs, and I suppose the extent that we get to it, PHRs as well. You should have all gotten or been able to click in and gotten to the PowerPoint presentation that we'll be working from on this during this call. I'm just looking right now at the first page, which talks about the agenda for the audio conference. And it really lays out specifically what we hope to do today, which is one, identify the objectives and what we're trying to do with the collaborative. I'll be covering that. And then Bill Spooner, who's on the steering committee for the collaborative, is going to say a few things about the steering committee and what he's working on, and also about how the collaborative will function and operate overall. And then we're going to talk a little bit about some specific things about the stimulus funding, where things are going, and what everybody should be doing in their respective communities, steps that you should be taking right now. And that'll be covered by Joe Lynch, who's with King & Spalding Law Firm and is of counsel to us in this project. So with that, let me turn to the second page, or I guess it's page two in the PowerPoint, which is the objectives of the collaborative overall. I mean, it's pretty straightforward. We want to make sure that our members gain access to the stimulus funding, but I also think we want to make sure that we help direct the way policy is formulated related to the stimulus funding and how meaningful use is defined, as well as other issues related to the regulations around the stimulus bill that was passed back in February, to ensure that, this makes as significant a difference as possible, and that we are really, as an alliance, utilizing what others are doing in our alliance who are leaders to help others learn faster and do a better job in their respective areas. As you all know, Premier's one of our strengths is the ability to quickly share information and help disseminate best practices, and that's really what we intend to do with this. So there's very definitely that goal, as well as really helping our members avoid having to do things twice. So whether it's interpreting the regulations or getting the materials that you need or having one place to go, which is a portal for information, we want to really help everyone save time and resources in the process of dealing with this law overall. And then I think ultimately we'll be holding meetings with members of Congress and the administration as a way to help them understand what the Premier Alliance is trying to do in this area. I'm pleased to say that we have a very large number of CIOs who've signed up to participate in this from our hospitals and health systems. I'm sure collectively, if we put it together, it represents hundreds of hospitals. I haven't totaled it up, but our members are in some cases very large health systems that are participating in this. So we're planning to proceed with conference calls when we think that we've got significant practical information to share with you that will be of value. And we're going to, as I mentioned, we'll be talking a little bit about the web portal that we've created. But you can see on this slide, too, the goals and how we're planning to proceed and what we're planning to do laid out there. So with that, let me stop and turn this over to Bill Spooner, who's on the steering committee that we've put together to help direct what we do in this process. And let me introduce Bill Spooner, who's with Sharp Healthcare in San Diego. Bill?
Good morning, everyone, and thanks for taking the time to join us this morning. I'm going to introduce the members of the steering committee, but before I do that, I thought I would emphasize a couple of the points that Blair just made. You know, clearly there are many, many organizations trying to understand the stimulus legislation, how we can best comply with it. Everyone is trying to understand what meaningful use is going to mean to us. We have trade organizations, vendor organizations, law firms, et cetera, all working in the area. And, you know, clearly there's some overlap, but we're hoping that we can find the synergy that really brings the value of a provider organization, a provider alliance, collaborative together as we're preparing to provide our input for the regulations. So between identifying best practices in working with the state and local governments to collaborating on the actual input on the regulations, we hope that this will be a very productive experience for all of us. Just to introduce the steering committee members, and we started by asking everybody to tell us a little bit about their organizations and what they're doing around electronic health records. And I think the best thing to do, rather than to describe it individually, is to say all of the organizations are fairly well known. We are all doing similar but different things. We are represented by probably all of the major EHR and EMR vendors. Many of us have health information exchange initiatives in which we are participating. There are different nuances in each community, but I think we represent a pretty broad spectrum of the marketplace. So just to introduce the members, and I'm going to go down the list. Terry Carroll, we've known for many years, now with Fairview Health Services in Minnesota. Martin Harris, well-known physician informatics leader and CIO at the Cleveland Clinic. John Haugham and Mark Pearson, both physicians with Peace Health and leading very advanced informatics and clinical decision support strategies within their organization. Lindsay Jarrell of the BayCare Health System, and there was a recent announcement from BayCare about their intent to become the first paperless community in the nation that you probably heard of. Craig Richardville from Carolina's Healthcare System in Central North Carolina. I'm with Sharp Healthcare. Becky Sykes leads a very large Catholic system, Catholic Healthcare Partners in the Northeast. Jim Feline, Avera Health from South Dakota, Integrated Delivery System. And Susan Waltman from the Greater New York Hospital Association. So as you can see, we're fairly widespread geographically. If you know a little bit about our applications, we represent many different application strategies, and I would expect that there are a lot of differences among our care models. So we hope that we are able to provide the right kind of leadership that the collaborative needs. And with that, I'll pass it along to Joe, and we can keep right on going with this discussion.
Great. Thank you, Bill. Folks, just wanted to let you know that there is going to be and is now a web portal community that is set up for this collaborative. It's meant to be a one-stop shop for all the documents that are important for you to know about. It allows us to share documents with you and vice versa for you to post documents and communicate with colleagues. So we'll be building that out over the next couple weeks. On page 5 of the slides, you can see the URL to go visit and register. It's a pretty quick process. You should get a username and password within 48 hours. And only thing I'd ask is if you're registering, use your work address, email address as the registrant. That'll help us in our vetting process. But we look forward to getting this site up and running and being very useful for going forward.
This is Joe Lynch from King & Spalding. If you could turn to page 6 of the slides, I'm going to quickly hit on a couple of key dates to be thinking about in terms of what's going to happen over the course of the next year on this. Then I'm going to move to some practical steps that I think that all the participants should be thinking about taking now, even in this phase when we are waiting for clarification on many issues under the stimulus legislation. So if you look on the slide on page 6, the anticipated timetable for HIT regulations, there's going to be draft regulations coming out in May of this year that's going to talk about the incentives under the stimulus legislation. I think that and July is probably when we're going to get the greatest insight in terms of what the final regulations are going to be. But the regulations that I expect out in May are going to focus on these new entities called Health Information Technology Regional Extension Centers. I think that those entities may serve the same kind of function that RIOs are serving today. I'm going to come back to that idea when I'm talking about practical action steps. But you should be on the lookout for those regulations coming out in mid-May on what it's going to take to qualify as a regional extension center and how to obtain the funding that's available for those centers. I said a second ago that I think we can expect the incentive regulations, the draft regulations, to come out in July of this year. There's an outside chance that the inpatient PPS regulations that are going to be available in pre-publication form later this week, there's a very outside chance that they may have something to say about meaningful use. I know that there's been some talk about that being the case. The advanced intelligence that I've got suggests that probably is not going to happen, but if there is anything in that, we'll be circulating that information. But I really think it's this summer when we're going to start to get some insight as to what HHS is thinking about in terms of what it's going to take to qualify for EHR incentives. And then the final regulations on the EHR incentives are due out by the end of this calendar year. I think you all know that the legislation contemplates that those regulations will be released in interim final form. That means that there will be clarifications and amendments after what we find out at the end of the year. But that's really the point at which everything is going to start to go live. One last date that's not on this slide because it occurred just on Friday, there's an announcement that came out from HHS on Friday with respect to two regulations that will be coming out shortly. Actually, the FDA regulation came out today. HHS is going to release a regulation on its own, and both those regulations are going to talk about new notification requirements when there is a breach of protected health information. The release that came out, the guidance that came out on Friday from HHS says that if you follow certain technological recommendations and methods that HHS is going to approve, if you follow those and you're a covered entity or a business associate, and those technology methodologies will convert PHI to an unreadable form, if you follow that and there is a breach, then you will not have to follow these notification requirements, because by following these technologies and methods, you will convert the PHI to a format that it cannot be understood by an unauthorized recipient. So the guidance that came out on Friday, there's a response period up until May 21st. Frankly, the guidance is not particularly illuminating, so I'm not sure whether the comments are going to be that illuminating either. But these regulations on the notification requirements on breaches are more detailed. As I said, the FDA reg came out today. The HHS regulation ought to come out shortly. Let's flip over to the slide on page 7. These are some key dates in terms of the incentive payments themselves. The first date that eligible hospitals are going to be able to obtain incentive payments under Medicare is October 1st, 2010, the beginning of federal fiscal year 2011. The comparable date for eligible professionals is January 1st, 2011. So if you think back to what I said a moment ago, that we're going to get the interim final regulations at the end of this calendar year, that means there's only going to be about 10 months for hospitals to figure out what they're going to have to do in order to qualify for the money as early as possible. My guess is that even if you're not qualified by the beginning of federal fiscal year 2011, October 1, 2010, my guess is you're still going to be able to get the full year's incentive payments, because I think that qualification is going to be a year-long process. But nevertheless, I do think that there's a going to be a big time pressure once we have the final regulations, a big time pressure in terms of focusing on what's necessary to qualify. The last thing I'll point out here is that, oddly enough, there is no date set in the regulation for the first payments to eligible hospitals or eligible professionals on the Medicaid side. As a practical matter, I think that the Medicaid dates are likely to be the same as the Medicare dates, because qualifying for the Medicaid incentives requires that you are using certified EHR technology. I think that's almost certainly going to be defined the same regardless of whether you're under Medicare or Medicaid. So I think you can probably look to the October 1, 2010 date as the earliest qualification date for Medicare or Medicaid incentives as well for hospitals, and then January 1, 2011 for physicians. Let's flip over to the slide on page 8. These are the practical steps that we want to try to focus on here. In all candor, since we don't have a lot of the specifics clarified at this point, there's not an awful lot that anyone can be doing right now, but there are some things that I think that you need to be doing right now. There are four areas that the stimulus legislation designates the states as playing a role. Each of your states has been authorized to play a role in four particular areas. And my recommendation to each of you is to concentrate on each of these four areas starting today. Be in touch with your governors, your secretaries of health in your state, the head of your state Medicaid agencies, others who are going to be playing an active role in terms of stimulus funding on these four areas. So the first area where states are authorized to get involved is in the process by which an eligible hospital will demonstrate that it qualifies for Medicaid EHR incentives. What the statute says is that each state will determine the method for demonstrating qualification, and that methodology has to be approved by HHS. Now, I don't expect HHS to approve wildly divergent methodologies for demonstrating that a hospital qualifies. But I do think the fact that states are authorized to get involved in this process opens up the door to you having influence with your state officials on the definition of what is meaningful use. The whole concept of meaningful use and the specifics of it are beyond the scope of this call. My guess is that if there are 100 people participating in this call, there's at least that number of concepts as to what meaningful use ought to be. But since your states are going to be playing a role in terms of the process by which you will demonstrate meaningful use, I think it's incumbent on you to start approaching your state officials today to tell them what you think meaningful use ought to be for you. I think this is also an opportunity, the role that states are going to play in the method for determining qualification. I think it's also an opportunity for you to discuss with your state officials what the concept of engaged in efforts means for purposes of qualifying for the first year of EHR incentives on the Medicaid side. What the statute says is to qualify for the first year of incentives on the Medicaid side, you only have to demonstrate that you are engaged in efforts to adopt, implement, or upgrade certified EHR technology. I think that that standard was set as a very low standard by Congress in an effort to make sure that the Medicaid money got out to hospitals as quickly as possible, but it is very vague as to what that standard means, and I think you need to be talking to your state officials as to what you think it ought to mean. And my own bias on this, and I know that there's a lot of difference of opinion on this, my own bias on the definition of meaningful use and the definition of what engaged in efforts ought to be is if the bar is set too high, we're not going to build the infrastructure that we need to build in order to accomplish the objectives that we all want to accomplish. So I think you can accomplish a lot by talking to your state officials today about what the process ought to be, what meaningful use ought to be, what the engaged in efforts ought to be, in order to use them as a vehicle, not only for what happens on the state level for Medicaid, but also to use them as a vehicle for getting in touch with HHS so that you can influence things with respect to the Medicare EHR incentives as well. So that's the first area where states are authorized. The second area where states are authorized to be involved is the statute actually says that the states are involved in the process by which HHS determines the amount of EHR incentives on the Medicaid side available for eligible hospitals. Once again, I think HHS is going to control this process, but the reason that I bring this to your attention is that if you parse your way through the legislation, your Medicaid EHR incentives are based on at least two levels of estimates that HHS is going to make. The first level of estimates is that it is based, your EHR incentives on the Medicaid side are based on the Secretary of HHS's estimate as to what your Medicare incentives are going to be. So that's the first level of estimate. The second level of estimate is that for your Medicare EHR incentives, those are based on the Secretary's estimate of your inpatient Medicare days and your total inpatient days, Medicare inpatient days and total inpatient days. Because that Medicare inpatient days number also takes into account Medicare Advantage patients, and because there's often a long delay between your cost reporting information and the date of your cost reporting information and the date that it's really effectively available to the Secretary, I think it's incumbent upon you now to work with your state officials to make sure that they have the best information possible on your facilities with respect to your inpatient Medicare days, your total inpatient days, and your estimate as to what your Medicare EHR or Medicaid EHR incentives are going to be, so that your state officials will be able to lobby on your behalf to make sure you get the maximum EHR incentives on the Medicaid side. The third area where you've got an opportunity to work with your states on this is HHS is also going to estimate the Medicaid EHR incentives for eligible professionals. And the statute expressly authorizes the Secretary to take data from the states on the costs that eligible professionals will incur. This is going to be especially important for any of the participants on the call who employ physicians or who otherwise engage physicians and bill for their services and physicians whose Medicaid population is at least 30%. For physicians, for institutions that employ physicians that qualify for these Medicaid incentives, it's going to be critical that you make sure they get the maximum incentives possible because, of course, that's money that ultimately is going to come to you as their employer. Parenthetically, and I'm going to mention this in a couple of minutes, parenthetically, I think it's in every institution's best interest to make sure that all the members of your medical staff get the maximum Medicare and Medicaid EHR incentives that they are entitled to, because to the extent that they get more incentive money, they're going to be looking to the hospitals less for support, and I think that that's going to help with the community-wide efforts to build networks that are going to be necessary to actually meet the connection requirement for meaningful use. So the point here with respect to state officials is HHS is going to be making estimates of the amount of money that is going to go to eligible professionals under the Medicaid EHR incentives. You can help make sure the Secretary has the best information to make that estimate to make sure that your physicians who are going to qualify for Medicaid incentives get the maximum amount available. On this point, I think there's also an opportunity to start getting at what is going to be a very, very thorny issue in all of this, and that is which physicians are hospital-based physicians, and the physicians that are hospital-based physicians are not going to be able to qualify for any incentives under either Medicare or Medicaid. I know this is an issue that Premier has focused on. I know there's a lot of activity on this already. The most recent that I saw was Senator Stabenow from Michigan sending a letter to the Secretary-directed director as emphasizing the importance of this definition of hospital-based physicians not being interpreted too broadly. I think that this avenue that you have as members to talk to your state officials is a perfect opportunity when you're talking about making sure that physicians get the maximum EHR incentive on the Medicaid side. I think it's a perfect opportunity for you to also weigh in on the issue of the definition of hospital-based physicians. Those of you who employ physicians directly or through affiliates are at risk on this issue for not getting the maximum EHR incentive through those physicians if that definition is too broad. I think working through your state officials now is a great way to make sure that it's not too broad. Finally, and this is much more general than these first three points, there's a lot of incentive money on the stimulus legislation that is not in the form of EHR incentives. The legislation is very, very vague as to, at this point, it's very, very vague as to how that money is going to get to the states, how much is going to get to each state, what the states are going to use it for. We're going to get some further clarification on that in mid-May when the Secretary of HHS has to release a draft plan as to how this money is going to roll out. But in these conversations that you're going to have with state officials on these other issues I've mentioned, it's a perfect opportunity for you to start buttonholing them as to how they are planning to use this unallocated money that's available under the stimulus legislation. Why don't you flip over to slide 9, and this is the last slide before we go to questions. Continuing on issues that I think that there are opportunities for you to take action steps today, those of you who were on the last conference call that Premier organized with respect to the stimulus legislation probably heard me say that I think it's going to be essential in most communities for there to be somebody that focuses, some body of people, I mean, some forum that focuses on community-wide networking issues. Whether that is a RIO or not is going to vary from community to community, but it is clear that in terms of meeting the meaningful use standard, no matter how far or how low the bar is set initially, it is clear that being connected to some extent throughout the community is going to be necessary to demonstrate meaningful use, and being connected is going to require some forum for discussions about what is necessary to actually link up in any community. Is there going to be hub technology necessary, or do the EHRs that the hospitals in the community have, do they have some kind of networking technology also already available that physicians can link up to? If there is going to be hub technology necessary, which is going to be the best vendor to supply that technology? Should you form a RIO? Is that the best vehicle for getting things done, or should you just stay as a forum? If you form a RIO or not, what are the options for funding the activities and the cost that you're going to need to actually go live on a network basis? I think it's inescapable you're going to have to start discussions already, or now, if you haven't discussed them already, with the other stakeholders, the other physicians, the other hospitals in your area to answer these questions. And my experience has been that these kinds of discussions easily can take a year. So once again, thinking about the timetable, if you've got between now and October 1 of 2010 to start getting incentive money, you really need to have these discussions now. You need to start these discussions now. I do think it's worth thinking seriously about organizing as a RIO in your community in order to qualify for these monies I mentioned earlier for regional extension centers. As I said, it's impossible to know now whether a garden variety RIO is going to be able to qualify as an HIT extension center, a regional extension center. I think there's a pretty good chance that they will. We're going to know more about that in mid-May when the draft regulations come out. But I think that the folks who are going to be best able to qualify for that regional extension money are the folks who are already in a forum now talking about how their community is going to link up. So that's another action step that I think you can take now. And then the final action step that I'll point to is the importance of educating the physicians on your medical staff. I mentioned a little while ago that for hospitals that are employing physicians, either directly through an affiliate, it's critical, of course, that those physicians qualify for the maximum incentives, because that's money that is going to be directly available to the hospital, because the hospital is going to be incurring the EHR costs that for the technology those physicians are going to be using. But even for physicians that you don't employ, to the extent that they maximize their EHR incentives, that is going to take pressure off the hospitals in terms of subsidizing costs the physicians are otherwise going to incur. I think you can also do yourself an awful lot of good by educating the physicians on your medical staff to try to help them avoid picking technology that's going to increase the networking costs community-wide. There are many, many vendors to choose from in terms of this technology. There are some vendors that are further along in terms of their interfacing capability with EHRs. I think that the hospitals are in a much better position than most physician groups, certainly small physician groups, in terms of educating the physicians as to what they need to do to qualify and the kind of technology that they ought to look at for qualifying. So those are the action steps that I think it's important for y'all to start thinking about taking now. I realize that on many of the action steps that I've talked to here, there's a lot of nitty-gritty details that we haven't gone into. One of the things, and I want to make kind of an overarching comment here in terms of what I see as the value of this collaborative. Bill and Blair mentioned that this collaborative is designed to be very, very practical and to provide information on a real-time basis. The best way for us to do that is to make sure that we know what information you need to know. And so the more feedback we get back from you in terms of the questions you're facing, the problems you're facing, the more that we know about what is going to be helpful to you, the more helpful we're going to be able to be. We're going to open it up for questions in just a second. We got a couple of questions ahead of time that I want to try to knock off quickly, and then I'll turn it over to Jasper to let you know how to ask questions, and we'll respond real time. The first question came from an institution that already has an EMR for its acute care services. It already has an EMR for the clinics that it owns, and the question that was posed was, would the institution be well served by providing an EHR for the members of the physicians on the medical staff that are not a part of the physician clinics? I take that to mean the independent medical staff members. There's a couple questions that come to my mind when I hear that question. First is, I'm not sure what the institution is driving at in terms of giving an EHR to independent physicians. That is certainly possible. There's a STARCL implications for that. There's a vehicle for doing it through STARCL if the physician pays at least 15%. It's also not clear to me whether any of these independent physicians might fall into the hospital-based physician category, but I think that my overarching response to this question is that it is probably too early for a hospital to decide to give technology to independent physicians. I think you'd be much more well served at this point to wait to see what the draft regulations look like and then make a decision on this issue. It's certainly, to the extent that a hospital provides technology to physicians and does so consistent with the STARCL regulations, it may facilitate community-wide networking. But on this question, I think I would hold off until we've got more insights in terms of what HHS is actually going to require for qualification. That's the first question. The second question touches on this question of or this issue of hospital-based physicians. And the question is, will physicians in clinics that are owned by hospitals be considered to be hospital-based physicians? At this point, we don't know the answer to that. I can tell you that the conference language that accompanied the stimulus legislation makes clear that not every physician working in hospital space is going to be deemed to be a hospital-based physician. As I said a moment ago, Senator Stabenow made it clear that she thinks it's absolutely critical that this issue be resolved in a way that maximizes the incentives going to physicians. But at this point, we just do not know where the dividing line is going to be between hospital-based physicians and those that are not hospital-based. We will get insight on where that dividing line is when the regulations come out in draft in July, and we'll be able to answer that question a little more effectively then. But for now, there's just no way of knowing the answer.
And let me just say that's one thing that we will do, which is that obviously when the draft regulations come out, we will help organize everybody to coordinate responses on some of these answers to make sure we get in a good loud voice on some of these important issues to our members.
So with that, we wanted to open it up to questions from the audience. Jasper, if you could weigh in and let people know how to ask questions and take them off mute.
And at this time, if you would like to ask a question, press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. Again, that is star one for questions. We'll pause for just a moment to compile the Q&A roster.
Okay. And, Jasper, while we're waiting, if people have questions, let me just mention a couple of quick things. First off, this call will be posted online, so we will send this out to you all. So if you want to share this call information with someone in your organization, you can send that link to them. So we will be sending that out after this call. So, again, you can share it with others. I just would mention, too, that on the Q&A here, it's not just questions. If somebody thinks there's something that we've overlooked or something that they would like to share with others in the collaborative, again, the goal here is to exchange information. So you may have an insight or a thought on something that you've done that you want to share, and we encourage you to do that. And then the final thing I want to mention is that if questions come up or you want to probe something further or there's something you think we should be working on, pass that along to John David White. And I think everyone's gotten his email address, but let me just mention it. It's John David. So the, you know, two names together, underscore white, just like the color white. So it's John David underscore white at premierinc.com. So that's who you should communicate with if you think there's something we should do, if you have an additional question, or if you want to direct us in some way, we'd like to hear from you. Jasper?
And your first question comes from the line of Dave Prince.
Hello, Dave Prince here. Hi, team. How are you?
Great.
I have two questions. The first one is, do you have a recommended definition of, quote, hospital-based physicians? That's the first question.
Dave, do you want to ask both questions or just one at a time?
Yeah, let me go ahead and throw the second one out. The second one relates to timing, because here in Illinois, our state has made $3 million in grant money available for implementing a health information exchange. And the due date for the grant proposals is May 15th. And it just seems like it's not at all coordinated with what's happening at the federal level. I'd be interested in your comments about that.
Let me take that second question first, if I could, and then get back to the hospital-based physician definition. I'm not familiar with the grant process in Illinois, but if the date is mid-May, I think you said, that's got to be something that was well in hand, well underway before the stimulus legislation came out. So the fact that they're not coordinated is probably that they never really were intended to be coordinated. One significant thing I will point out to you is that some of the incentive money, and this is really primarily on the physician side, some of the incentive money, the money you're entitled to is offset by monies you get from other sources, but significantly money that you get from a state or federal government is not taken into account. So I don't know if, Dave, any of that Illinois money is directed toward physicians that you guys are connected with, but I would not hold back on trying to apply for that money for that reason. But beyond that, I really can't explain to you why, the timetable for Illinois. I think it's just totally independent of what's going on the stimulus legislation. On the question of definition of hospital-based physician, I've got to start by telling you what my bias is. I believe that Congress built this in This idea that hospital-based physicians should not get incentive money, I believe Congress built it in to make sure there wasn't double dipping. And I think that that's perfectly legitimate that there not be double dipping. I think what Congress failed to recognize, though, is that when a hospital, no matter what physicians we're talking about, when a hospital implements technology that provides an EHR benefit to physicians, the hospital is implementing technology above and beyond what it would need for itself. And for that reason, it is probably incurring costs above and beyond what would be necessary for a hospital-only EHR. Now, I'm not saying it's black and white, but I think that as a general matter, the more capabilities you add, the more it's going to cost, and there are capabilities that are generally necessary for physicians that are not necessary for hospitals. So I think there's actually kind of a fundamental misconception as to whether there's double dipping. And so that's my bias. My bias is that there's not double dipping when we're talking about physician capabilities, technology that has physician capabilities beyond hospital. And so given that that's my bias, I would want to see a very, very narrow definition and narrow enough so that it really probably does just sweep in the historic reps, the radiologists, anesthesiologists, and pathologists, but only with respect to technology that is hospital-specific technology. I, for instance, have pathologist clients who have private practices, and they need EHR technology on their own. So my bias would be to have that definition for hospital-based physician be very, very narrow, because I think that the reality is there's not double dipping in any event.
Okay, can I do a follow-up?
Sure.
I like that. I like your answer there, and I guess where I'm coming from is, that, in my opinion, it would be nice if Premier went on record, the members of this team went on record, to say, here's what the definition is that we support.
And Dave, you know, I think you identify a very, very important issue for this collaborative. There's going to be many things that Premier can go on record for, and we are definitely going to go on record for everything that the collaborative supports. And my guess is that there would, at least if I had to guess, I'd say that there would be almost unanimity of opinion that narrower is better for that definition. It's not clear to me whether that's going to be the case on, for instance, the definition of meaningful use. And so one thing that Premier is not going to do is Premier is not going to take a position that the collaborative really can't get behind, because we recognize there may be differences of opinion.
So along those lines, we will be sharing things, certainly working through this with the steering committee is the idea. I would just say during the legislative process on the stimulus, we did send letters to leaders in Congress about this, making sure that physicians that are employed by hospitals are eligible generally, and I think it led to the language being included so that they would at least be considered and not excluded. But we need to probably take an additional step here. So it's a good point for follow-up for us to talk about it with the steering committee.
Thank you.
Jasper?
And your next question comes from the line of Mitty Alder.
Hi, this is John Strides. I'm here with Midian. My question was that the state of Illinois is kind of pushing towards this medical training area or where you have a small group of hospitals within a medical training area to trade information. Yet at HIMSS, you talk about the National Health Information Network and the strides that they're making, and the fact that they're coming out with a toolkit in May in order to coordinate the laws between states to do interstate transfer. How do you foresee this kind of evolving when we're building regional and at the same time the federal government's building a federal system?
My own sense of that, John, is that there's great aspirations for a nationwide network, and I think it's something that we all have to work hard to get to. I think it's going to be an enormous push just to get individual communities organized. You know, I've got experience in organizing communities, and in communities that have gotten organized very, very quickly, it often can take a couple of years. So I personally think it's going to be quite a while before there's anything real that's happening on the nationwide, or for that matter, statewide level. And by real, I mean something that is at least some form of electronic clinical messaging. I think that's quite a ways off, and frankly, I don't think it's nearly as pressing as to accomplish that on the community. Now I actually don't know how broad the medical trading areas Illinois is thinking of. I don't know geographically how broad they are, but to me, the biggest need right now is for communities to be able to serve the patients that reside in those communities. Does that answer your question, John?
Yeah, it does. But you know, at the same time, they've released their Open Connect appliance in an open source, and I'm seeing that both of them are coming out. And I think the federal government's pretty evolved at this point if they're starting to provide those tools. The VA is already sharing data with the military system, and they're already starting to do mass share, and a few of those other systems have been in place for a while. It seems like they're doing pretty well at integrating and offering tools. And since a lot of these regional things are very nascent, and we're not even sure what the technology is behind them, I'm just wondering why we aren't adopting more of those federal tools in these regional things, regional systems.
I think we're going to live through a period of some pain, or at least some lack of knowledge in terms of what technology is ultimately going to be the most effective technology. I personally think that's inescapable. My own personal experience has been it's often difficult to get people together to agree on technology, what technology. And so I just feel, as a practical matter, every community is going to probably have to live through this. It could be that some technology, it might be the Connect technology that you mentioned, it could be some technology ends up shooting to the fore and then everyone gets online and it all happens much faster than I'm suggesting, but I just do believe it's going to be kind of fits and starts for a while until some technology rises to the top. Jasper, you want to move to the next question, please?
And your next question comes from the line of Richard Bach.
Excuse me, my mute was on. This is Richard Eschbach with the Mountain States Health Alliance. Could you elaborate a little more on the definition and the role of the HIT Regional Extension Center?
Yes, the legislation creates these new entities that are called Health Information Technology Regional Extension Centers. If you read through the legislation and the conference language, to me, the best way of describing these things is they look like a regional health information organization that might also provide technical assistance to providers that maybe are beyond the community that a RIO would serve. It's sort of a hybrid, if you will, between a true technical assistance entity and a entity that actually is the hub for clinical messaging. And what the legislation says is that by mid-May, the secretary has to release draft regulations defining what these things are, what you need to do to qualify, and what you need to do to apply for the money that's available. The money that is available is, if you do qualify as an extension center, you can receive up to 50% of your capital and operating expenses for up to 4 years. And so I think, to me, the big question at this point is, will a garden variety RIO be able to qualify? And I am very hopeful that they will be able to qualify, because I do think that RIOs are going to be necessary in most communities. In my experience, there are two fundamental issues that are troublesome or difficult in forming a RIO, and money is one of them. And so to the extent that there's federal funding that fosters the development of these, I think that they'll get off the ground faster. The other problem is that getting anyone to share information is often difficult, but, you know, that's the nature of the beast here. So at this point, we've got to wait for these draft regulations. They're supposed to be out by, I think it's May 17th, and once they're out in draft, one of the things Premier will be doing will be circulating information as to what these extension centers look like and what the draft regulations say in terms of qualifying.
Very good. Thank you.
Yep.
And your next question comes from the line of Peter Ingram.
Hi, this is Peter Ingram from the Sinai Health System in Chicago. We are a high Medicaid provider, and which means, of course, our physicians are also have a high percentage of Medicaid. So we've faced something of a question, I guess, in terms of when we make an investment for an EMR for our physician group practice, which is a part of our affiliated with our health system. The way the Medicaid regulation portion of the legislation appears to be written, you can get paid for the amounts actually expended, but if you have to wait until 2011 to get to spend money on Medicaid for qualify for Medicaid funding, you may miss out on the Medicare funding. Can you comment on the timing problem there?
I think there is a timing issue. I guess just at the outset, and I think this is implicit in what you said, Peter, but just to clarify, physicians are going to have to choose whether they're going to take Medicare incentives or Medicaid incentives.
Correct.
And actually one thing that's a little vague is whether a physician could take Medicaid incentives 1 year and then switch over to Medicare incentives in a following year. I think the answer is going to be no, but the statute doesn't actually address that. There's a lot that needs to be clarified in terms of how the Medicaid incentives on the physician side are going to be set and when they're going to be set. As I said earlier, it's going to be based on HHS estimates. And estimates of the allowable cost that physicians might incur for EHR technology. There's absolutely no guidance out there yet as to how the secretary is even going to go about that. And so, as frustrating as I know this answer is, that there's really no way of knowing the best way to proceed on your question. I think until the draft regulations come out in July. Peter, I do think your institution is probably one of the prime types of institutions I think of when I think about the practical steps that I talked about. Since you've got a high Medicaid population, there's a lot that you can be talking to your state officials about. And I think this timing question is one of them. And so I'm sorry that I can't give you a better answer on it, but there's no way of knowing until the draft regs come out.
Have you seen any indication that one might get credit for earlier expenditures prior to 2011?
I have not seen anything, but it is almost inconceivable to me that those who have already made expenditures will somehow be disadvantaged. I honestly can't understand how HHS would try to get to that position. I realize that HHS or CMS certainly has a history of to try to get to a position like that. But given that the focus of this is to get money out into the economy as quickly as possible, one focus of this, I just can't believe that anyone is going to be disadvantaged for expenditures they've incurred. Now, I don't know how far back it may be. I know that there are many RIOs, or a number of RIOs operating, and a number of institutions who are already electronically much further along than others. I don't know if there's going to be some reach back date that will be a cutoff, But certainly recent expenditures, I'd be shocked if those somehow count against you.
Yeah. Maybe this is another area for the collaborative to take action.
I think that's definitely worth thinking about, and we should get feedback from people after this call as to particularly, what the extent to which collaborative members have already incurred costs. If we could get some feedback on that, that would help us figure out how to proceed on this.
Thank you.
Yep. Jasper, next question.
As a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. Again, that is star one. Your next question comes from the line of Ernie Hood.
Yeah, hi. This is Ernie Hood with Group Health Cooperative in Washington State. I just wanted to make sure that the collaborative does include in scope of what we covered the HIPAA changes. I appreciate you bringing up the change that around notification of breach, but there were a few other changes slipped in the bill as well, some of which seem to run contrary to the philosophy of data sharing. So I just want to make sure that the collaborative does include in scope coverage of those issues as well.
And Ernie, that's a great point to raise. And yes, it is within the scope of what we want to cover on this kickoff call. We wanted to try to focus more on the incentives, but we know that that's an issue for collaborative members, and it is something we're going to focus on.
And let me just mention that we're very active here in Washington on this issue from an advocacy vantage point as well. And we had a significant hand in the privacy language. It was finally included. It was improved substantially in the process, although, we're still concerned about where the regulations may go. So we're very active on this issue.
I know we're close to the end of our hour period. I think we can run a little while longer. I want to emphasize something that JD mentioned earlier, and that is that there's avenues for submitting your questions to Premier directly, and we can get back to you. So if you have not had a chance to ask a question on this call, you definitely should get in touch with JD, and we'll make sure that you get the answer. Why don't we take just a couple more questions and see how we go. Jasper, next one, please.
And your next question comes from the line of Mark Pearson.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Hi. Actually, it isn't a question. I just wanted to very, very briefly share what's going on in the state of Washington and suggest that it's worth discussing as a model. With our state health record bank pilots, and a lot of that actually came from Peace Health and from Whatcom County, we see using health information exchange among providers, what we view as the commercial side of the bank, and health information exchange among patients as all part of one initiative. And I believe that there is core technology available pretty much off the shelf now with Health Vault for the provider side, the consumer side, and Amalga on the provider side, so that people who want to get into what has been a technologically encumbered area of creating RIOs or whatever you want to call them, and we've been measured to be, in Whatcom County, the most integrated community in America, can now sort of bypass the real headaches. And I can tell you after 15 years of working on it, getting providers to pick interoperable EMRs, have fun. I wouldn't spend my time trying to do that. I'd try to get an interoperability tool like Amalga. So if this group wants to go down that pathway, we can certainly share what we're doing and bring others into that conversation.
Mark, that's a terrific offer, and it's exactly why Premier has formed this collaborative. I know that there's an enormous amount of information and experience among collaborative members. One of the most difficult things I've found in trying to do technology projects is to know where to go to get real information on people's experience with different vendors and different products, and I do think that that's going to be an incredibly useful resource that this collaborative will facilitate. Jasper, can we have one more question?
And if you would like to ask a question, please press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. Again, that is star one.
Thank you.
I've got a quick question for you.
Joe. We have a question in the room here.
It's Richard Mankiewicz with Premier Informatics. So prior to the stimulus legislation, there were a number of standard-setting bodies in existence that were trying to work on bits and pieces of this, and certification especially, and also the transmission. What role, if any, do those bodies now play in this?
It's a great question. The legislation, as a part of defining what is meaningful use, says you have to use quote-unquote certified EHR technology. There is no certified EHR technology today because the certification standards haven't been set yet. The certification standards for interoperability that are monitored and systems awarded certification today is through CCHIT. But it's an open question as to whether CCHIT is going to be involved in this new certification process, and an open question as to whether any of the existing certification standards are going to be imported into these new certification standards. That's something we're going to get insight on when these regs come out in July, but it's possible that we're really not going to know. In fact, I think it's likely that we're really not going to know for sure until the final regs come out as to who's going to do it and what the standards are going to be. One thing that the statute expressly says is that the Secretary of HHS is directed to make the standards more rigorous over time. I actually see that as a good thing because I think that implicit in that is that at least initially they'll be set at a level that can be met more easily by both the vendor community and then in turn by the provider community. So at this point, no one knows who's going to do it or what they're going to be.
Okay, what should people be talking to their vendors about right now, so the people on the phone, if anything?
Here's a couple of things that I think you ought to be discussing with your vendors. If you already have EHR technology, the first question you got to ask your vendors is what they are doing to get certification, and are they going to charge you anything if they need to upgrade their technology, the technology that you are using that is theirs, whether they're going to charge you anything to upgrade it. The area where I think upgrades of existing technology are most likely to be necessary is on being able to communicate electronically with HHS, the quality measures that ultimately will be set. But the vendors are all over this. They are completely fluent with what's going on. The livelihood of their businesses depends on it. And so I think that for those with existing EHRs, you've got to go to your vendors and have them tell you exactly what they're going to do. For those of you who do not have an EHR or are on the verge of switching your EHR, I think it's critical that you negotiate into your contracts with the vendors that you will not be charged for anything necessary for the vendor to keep the product in compliance with the standards that will be necessary for you to get the EHR incentives. I think it's also critical that, and this is something I think you'd probably do anyway, but I think it is absolutely critical that those of you considering switching EHRs or starting a new one is you've got to really press the vendors on the interface capability of their technology and not just the capability but the interfaces that they have already accomplished. I will tell you in my experience, many, many good vendors have put interfaces in place that they are not confident they can replicate in other sites. And so I think your conversations with the vendors have to be very, very detailed on the specifics of your community. How many hospitals, what EHRs those hospitals have or are considering, how many physicians, what's in the community already for EHRs. I think the more detailed you can be on what you have and what you expect in your community and be specific with your vendors on that issue, the better off you're going to be in terms of getting a product that will be a good product for you.
Okay. Well, Jasper, let's conclude the call. Let me just say a reminder that emailed questions or comments or recommendations for action should go to John David White. That's John David. That's one word, underscore White at premierinc.com. Also, we're setting up this website, which will be a resource center, as well as a place to issue or put in your questions and so forth and have discussions. And you've got the address there, and I encourage you to sign up. So, Jasper, I think that's it. We're at the end of the call, and I appreciate everybody's participation. Anything you want to say closing, Jasper?
that this concludes today's conference call. You may now disconnect.